Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams along with Sherry Coolidge. Silent Phil in the ones and two. Special guest today. UC football. I don't know if I call him a legend. Football Hall of Famer. And a long, long time Bearcats football radio analyst, caller, commentator. Jim Kelly Jr.
How about legend in the making?
I think he's already made, right?
All right.
He is in the Bearcats Hall of Fame, which is named after his father, Jim Kelly Sr., who was a Bearcats football player, assistant football coach, and longtime athletic administrator. So the Kellys know UC football, you know, better than anyone. It's really been a huge part of their lives for decades. And
it's the perfect guest heading into a big football weekend.
Yeah, and we thought, you know, and we'll ask Jim Kelly this, you know, whether he thinks this is the biggest regular season game ever in the history of Bearcats football. I had this discussion with a fellow Bearcats fan the other day, and I'd like to see what he thinks, having been around the program for over four decades now. And so, yeah, looking forward to having him on.
The Coolidges are making the road trip.
Awesome,
we're going.
That's awesome.
We're going to show Jack around the Notre Dame campus, and Alex is like, are we prepared to pay for that? Like, we'll get to that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's first talk a little politics here briefly, and then we'll jump over and bring on Jim Kelly. What do you got, Sherry? What's up your sleeve today on the political front?
Scott Wortman and I have the kind of story that's a quintessential city story. I'm sorry. That's the only way to put it. We've talked a lot on this podcast and written a fair amount about Tom Brinkman's proposed charter amendment that has, you know, these eight city reforms, really seven city reforms. Two are kind of the same thing. And Scott and I were assigned the kind of story that no reporter wants to be assigned. Can you write an analysis of each reform? And Scott and I were like, sure we can. But we did it. And we are looking at it, and Scott and I found a mistake. Just by really doing a close analysis of what the petitioners in this charter reform petition drive wanted council pay to be cut, and they wanted it based on a certain census number. And the wrong phrase was inserted into the legislation and subsequently the ballot language, which would actually mean the council pay would increase. So made a round of calls yesterday to the city, the Board of Elections, Tom Brinkman, even he didn't catch it. No one caught this. It's a kind of a very esoteric, like you have to be looking at the actual written charter amendment and then go to the census, which is what Scott and I did. And we were pretty much met with silence.
The change was that he had median household income, and it changed to, like, the city solicitor changed it to what, family household
Correct.
Income, something like that.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a problem. That should not have been changed. It really raises a lot of questions. There's been a lot of fights from Democrats on this whole thing, and it's like, it's amazing how many headlines that have been garnered out of this thing that because of Democrats, you know, fighting it or not liking it. And it's like, leave it alone. It would have quietly gone on the ballot and let the voters decide. But they just couldn't help themselves. As one of my colleagues here in the newsroom said, as we were talking about this the other day, and it was not Sherry. It's like the Democrats just can't help themselves. We're talking about the local Democrats in this case.
So I do – I mean, this was – things were turned in late. It was written in haste. These things are both true. And the city really is just saying, well, we had to do it quick, and that's just what happened. And it's – and the question now is – should it be corrected and how? And nobody really knows. The Board of Elections, I know, is really kind of grappling. This is not their mistake. They don't write the right language. It's not their
fault.
It's not their job to, you know, check every little fact, like, of the things that come in from the municipalities and the petition drives. But it is their job to be honest with voters. And what's written on that language is not. And it's a massive conflict because the petitions will be posted saying, and each polling place saying one thing. What's written on that ballot will be something different. Now, if it fails, it doesn't really matter. But if it passes, what gets inserted into the city charter? My favorite thing, though, about all of this is there's a lot of oops going around. But we are talking about the city charter. Like, on one hand, we're always like, we're the gold standard of all cities. Our city charter is the most amazing government in the history of city governments.
Yeah, not quite.
On the other hand, we're like, eh, it's a mistake. Oh, well, I'll just put it in there. I can't really reconcile those two things.
Pretty amazing to think that all these years we've touted this good government city charter and it's not even had any kind of recall mechanism for the mayor or any layers like that in there, which is part of this now sweeping charter amendment. But anyway, we'll Sherry, we'll keep up with your coverage on this.
Next week, each day, point by point, Scott and I did write these analyses. We, you know, got stuck on this one for a little bit, but we did in the end do the work we needed to do. So you can read all about that next week. Early voting starts the 5th.
Yep. Sounds great. Let's go on and bring on our special guest, Jim Kelly. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as we mentioned earlier, pleased to welcome Bearcats radio analyst, Bearcats Football Hall of Fame, in the Hall of Fame that is named for his late father, Jim Kelly. Pleased to welcome Jim Kelly Jr. Jim, how you doing? And I'm only calling you Jr. in that in that reference just because I mentioned your dad. But otherwise,
sure. No, that's okay. Not a problem at all. And I'm doing fine, Jason. And Sherry, thank you.
Well, let's jump right to it. What are your feelings right now coming into this week? Notre Dame, the Bearcats going to a South Bend. And what is this like for you as how important? I mean, Bearcats football has been your life, your dad's life, your family's life. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, it's this is totally different. It really is. You know, there's been some big bowl games along the way. Certainly the Peach Bowl last year where the Bearcats, you know, went 9-0 during the regular season, a shortened season with COVID, but then went up against Georgia in the Peach Bowl. And then going back, almost a dozen years ago, we had the Orange Bowl and Sugar Bowl back-to-back years where the Bearcats were, you know, at that particular point in time within the top 10 for the most part. And those were big games. But from a regular season standpoint, the way that this one is shaped up is unbelievable. There's been nothing like it in my memory. And as you pointed out, Jason, I've been around a long time. I played 40 some years ago, even before that, with my dad being on the staff there at Cincinnati, I certainly, you know, hung around and was a big Bearcat fan at that particular point in time. So 50 plus years or whatever, I've never seen anything like this.
Wow.
And even think back 2.5 years ago when this game was first announced, or two years ago, can't remember exactly when Mike Bones said that we're going to be playing Notre Dame in a regular season game. You know, you're thinking, okay, well, that's a big game.
Yeah.
But the way that this has all come together, it's absolutely amazing. Yes, Notre Dame, traditional powerhouse, you know, obviously in college football, one of the most, decorated and legendary programs. Cincinnati, for the most part, been good the last 12, 15 years, but not the Notre Dame level. And then all of a sudden this year, and what Luke Fickell's been able to do in the last 3 years that he's been here, after struggling that first year, he's built this program into, you know, he likes to say a top 10 team, but he would really like it to be a top 10 program. And quite honestly, to his credit, I think he's pretty much there. You know, it's one of those things where longevity will tell, you know, if they can stay there next year and the year after and so on. But all of a sudden you're looking at, depending on which poll you look at, number 7 versus number 8, number 7 versus number 9, number 8 versus number 9. You know, in a regular season game, there's never in my, you know, in my memory been anything like this for UC football.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to say, and I'm going by the AP poll because it has the Bearcats ranked higher. So it's number 7 Cincinnati against number 9 Notre Dame. And that was going to be my question to you. And you really kind of answered it, is that, well, I think it's pretty clear this is the biggest regular season game in the history of Bearcats football. Do you think it's the biggest game in the history? And I know we're going back to 2009 Sugar Bowl. That was a top 10 matchup against Tim Tebow's Florida team. But can you make the argument that this is the biggest game, given that there's potential playoff implications on the line here, that this is the biggest game ever in the history of University of Cincinnati football?
I think you could certainly make that argument, you know, that the game against Tebow and the Florida Gators that year, Urban Meyer was the head coach on that team. Yep. And they had been number one that entire year until they got beat by Alabama. That dropped them to 3-4. That was before the playoffs, but still the, you know, you played in the bowl game based on where you finished up ranking that year. And the Bearcats, I think, ended up fourth, and that put them up against Florida. That was certainly a big game. You could also make the argument in Brian Kelly's last year at Cincinnati, which would have been 2009, the Bearcats were 11-0 going into Pittsburgh to play against a very good Pittsburgh team. But at that time, Pittsburgh was not ranked in the top 10, but still a hostile environment, and one that if you did win it, you have a perfect regular season. And they did win that game, and, you know, and everybody knows about the Pike to Benz pass that won the game and then put them into that Sugar Bowl that we were talking about against Tim Tebow. So you could argue that might have been the, you know, the biggest regular season game, but I don't think so. I think this one's bigger. I really do, because it's the, in my opinion, it's, you know, that was a great Cincinnati team. They, you know, the next year, they, with Butch Jones coming in, they were not very good. It took them a little bit to get back there, and things kind of, I don't know, became mediocre from there. But the way that Luke Fickell has built this program from the bottom up when he took over for Tommy Tuberville, he's now at the point where it's not just, it wasn't just last year where they had a great year. Obviously, this year they're having a very, very good year so far. It could make it great with a win this week. But I see the future being, you know, year after year that this can happen. Obviously, consistency with Coach Fickell staying and things like that. But then the Big 12 coming into play here within a year, two or three, depending on how that all plays out. The recruiting is going to go up, which is just going to make them that much better and that much more of a national powerhouse, not to mention the caliber of teams that you're playing week in and week out in your regular season is going to be better as well. So I guess that's a long way of answering. I think this is the biggest game in University of Cincinnati football history, yes.
Do you do anything different to prepare for a game like this than you do for other games?
That's the one thing that I think probably is a little bit of a misnomer. The one thing about football coaches and football teams is they are unbelievably consistent in the way they do things. And that's everything from, you know, their practice routines to their schedule and things like that. So the answer to that would be no, other than I think there's, you know, let's say there's 125 players in this program, you know, counting the walk-ons, not to mention a staff of 20-something or whatever, counting coaches and you know, the additional staff. I think every one of them knows that there is a raised level of, or a heightened level of, would you call it, urgency for this game. These opportunities don't come along that often. So maybe they're not doing anything different in reference to their daily and weekly schedule for this week. But at the same time, there's not one person in that organization that doesn't know the importance of this game. And, you know, maybe they're staying another hour late at night to just break down a little bit more tape and, you know, to fine tune the, you know, the game plan or things like that. But I don't think they're doing anything really different. But there's, again, there's not one person that doesn't know the importance of this game.
Is this you're in your 26th year as the radio analyst?
Yeah, actually, it's my 31st year.
Oh, okay. I was going by the website. They listed on the website in your bio, in the Hall of Fame bio, that was your 26th, so we got to update that. So this is your 31st year.
Yeah, well, you know. Wow. I actually started in 88, stayed on through 91. At that particular point in time, a bunch of little kids running around and, you know, a wife trying to get four of them to soccer and football games. And the Bearcats at that time were struggling pretty badly.
Yeah.
And I kind of walked away for 3 years. And then additionally, there was some radio, you know, network changes there that I don't know, that this kind of said, I don't think I want to do this anymore for right now. And then fortunately in 1995, when it went to what is now iHeartRadio, WLW called me and said, hey, Greg Cook's stepping down, would you be interested in coming back? And I said, yeah. So ever since 95, I've been doing it, and that might be where that number came from, but I did it from 88 to 91, so four seasons.
It's all told 31 seasons on the Bearcats. And you played in the 70s and you know, the leading receiver from 73, 74, 75. You know, Jim, and as a UC alum myself, when I think about Bearcats football, I always think back to my freshman year, 93. It snowed. It was a Saturday afternoon when Memphis came to town, and I went to the game with my roommate Brian Rafferty, and you could count the amount of people in the stands.
And, well, it was one of those, and that was one of the years I had taken off, and I wasn't very smart about it. I guess I was used to being in the press box. I had a pair of Chuck Taylor Converse gym shoes on in that snow and froze my feet off.
Were you wearing Crocs, Jason? Are the Crocs like a new?
I don't know if were Crocs invented then.
Are those a new?
I was probably wearing flip-flops.
Believe me, I'm pretty anti-socks, so maybe I wasn't.
But I remember my roommate and I talking about, yeah, he's from Northeast Ohio and Stowe, and, you know, football's obviously a huge deal there. And I remember he actually transferred the next year to Ohio State, and his brother had gone to Penn State. And I remember having this conversation. He's like, I really would like to be at a school that where football's a big deal and the students are really into it. And I'm not, he brought that up to me. And I remember we had gone to that game, and it was, you know, if people right now who are Bearcats fans, who maybe have only become Bearcats fans in recent years, could see that and see really how far this program has come. And you have seen that. You've seen this program at bare bones bottom, you know, playing at Riverfront Stadium, playing in front of, you know, empty bleachers at Nippert Stadium, to see where it is now. My goodness, what is that? What does that like for you, knowing that how big that this has been your life? This is, like you said, not only your career, but your dad's career. And what is that like for you to see where this program is today, knowing where it was, you know, for a long time?
Yeah, it means a lot to me. And if my dad was around, it would mean a lot to him. And the fortunate part of that is, you know, he was not in great health, but he was still around for the, you know, the 2008-2009 seasons, got to most of the games. Brian Kelly's first year, they went to the what was called the PapaJohns.com Bowl in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah, I remember that,
and he made
Southern
that
Miss
bowl game. And absolutely, he would be thrilled to see where it is right now. And again, he lived through a little bit of that with the Orange Bowl and Sugar Bowl. But that being said, you know, you mentioned the 93 game there with Memphis and the number of fans. You know, fortunately, when I played, we won a few games and we had some people in the stands, but not many. You know, maybe 12,000-15,000 max, maybe a little bit more than that. I think we played Temple in 74. They were ranked in the top 15 and we ended up beating them. I think maybe there was 20,000-22,000 people there that day. So I did get to play in front of some people, but then I also saw it go beyond that in the late 70s, the 80s, the years you're talking about, where there was only, you know, maybe they announced the crowd at 7,000 or 8,000, but it was probably more like 2,500 or something like that.
Yeah.
So like every crowd estimate almost ever.
Yeah,
little exactly. Overreach usually.
Yes. Well, I mean, the one thing about it is that they are allowed to count season ticket holders that bought tickets but didn't, you know, maybe didn't show, particularly in the Memphis game because of the snow. I think there was a second game that year in the snow with Kentucky, too. It might have been a year before. But anyway, that being said, you know, now here's one of the other reasons I left the broadcast booth in the early 90s is Paul Keels and I, Paul's now the play-by-play voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. We did a game at Penn State where the Bearcats lost 81-0. It you walked out of there just feeling, I mean, you can imagine how the players felt. I know I, as a broadcaster, was like, I was devastated. Not devastated. I wasn't like I was like, you know, I just, the beating that you took that day, not necessarily the physical beating, but on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
It was one of those days that everything went right for Penn State and nothing went right for Cincinnati. You just walked out of there and you went, oh my goodness, this program is at its, you know, at its lowest level. And that was after Dave Curry had left and Tim Murphy was the head coach. And there had been some issues there where they had to limit scholarships based on an NCAA probation thing. And it was just at a very, very low level. And if you were around at those points, and you would say to yourself, there's no way this program can recover. And even when I was in school, there was talk about just dropping football and, you know, using where Nippert Stadium is for, you know, whatever, the new business school or whatever the talk was at the time. Or, you know, it was like, maybe drop down to at the time, which was 1AA, which would be FCS today. But fortunately, that didn't happen. They put some money in the Nippert Stadium and, you know, magically, you know, 30 years later, 20 some years later, it is one. I mean, Nippert itself now with sold out crowds is just absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
The fact that it's right in the middle of the campus, you know, the place rocks, you know, two sold out games so far this year. Well, I think the Murray State was not quite sold out, but almost at capacity. Yeah. Temple's already sold out. UCF is the fourth home game, and that one's going to be a sellout, I believe. And, you know, who knows about the last two. But
also the choice of coaches.
What was that?
The choice of coaches. USC is like, dear Luke Fickell, like, can you come to us? And he's like, no. So it's amazing, like, how it's all of the things combined that have brought us to this point. You're talking about this 30-year background, and I'm just stunned of where we are right now. It's crazy.
You are absolutely right. And, you know, you'd like to think there's a magic formula for all this, but there's not. And the one thing, and I'll just add this about, you know, Jason, to your point about my dad, you know, there were people like him along the way who, you know, maybe they didn't envision this all the way, but they did what they could to make sure that Cincinnati football survived. And what they don't realize, and, you know, most of those folks are gone from the university or, in, you know, in my dad's case and in a couple of other folks, guys like Glenn Sample, you know, who was there for a long time, those guys have passed away. But they don't realize all the little building blocks that they did along the way that helped it take this last jump to get to where it is today.
And, give me goosebumps, you know,
if you,
Jim.
You go back to 80, you go back to the years you're talking about, the 81-0 loss in the 1991 or whatever that was, and then, you know, what you're talking about in 93, and you look at Nippert Stadium and the program ranked number 7 in the country, not to mention within 2 years going to the Big 12. I don't know that anybody could have envisioned that, but a whole lot of hard work and behind the scenes work has made that happen, and it's an absolutely phenomenal story.
It really is. And one thing I remember this too, like, that Du Bois bookstore had a t-shirt, and I this is early in my, you know, time at UC, and it said something along the lines of University of Cincinnati, a drinking school with a football problem. And it was like in the football program at time, you know, had kind of become like, it was an afterthought for students. It was an afterthought for the city. It was kind of a joke at times, and it's And you're right. I think, you know, just to put this in perspective and to see where it is today going into, and Jim, I think, you know, they walk into the Big 12 on day one as a top contending team. This team is ready to do that. One thing I wanted to ask you about too, and Sherry referenced coaches through the years. Is there one coach, and I had this discussion with a fellow Bearcats fan just recently, and we kind of came to the conclusion it might have been Mark D'Antonio, but I wanted to get your take on this. Is there one coach that you really point to that you say that's the guy that put it on, you know, sort of sent it now on the trajectory that it's on?
It's hard to pinpoint one.
Yeah.
I'll kind of take you through the scenario here. I mentioned those guys with building blocks. I think Rick Minner doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah.
You know, and Rick would admit this. Rick was here 10 years. Now, Rick was here 10 years because he didn't win enough to get another job in some cases. And he was here because he didn't lose enough to get fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was here 10 years and he did a lot of good. And he's still at this time a very good friend of mine, and I respect him a whole lot. Now, that being said, he kind of – Bob Goins was here at the time as the AD, and what he was able to do was parlay an opportunity as the bowls started to expand. ESPN was like creating bowls just made for television events, basically. Yeah. But he was able to talk to ESPN and make a deal with the folks in out in Boise to get Cincinnati at that time into what was called the Humanitarian Bowl in 1997. Cincinnati's first bowl game since when my dad played in 50 or 51. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look at the, you know, to look at the media guide. But that being said, it was a huge day. And so I think Rick deserves credit.
Now, agreed.
Beyond that, Mark D'Antonio took it to the next level. And I remember having a conversation with Bob Goins. He told us, he goes, you know, and he was on the fence with Rick, and Rick knows this. And with the move to the Big East at that time, he thought, okay, I really don't know if I'm going to stay with Rick Minner. And he didn't say this publicly to me, but this all came out after the fact. And then there was a game, and actually when we were in South Florida and the Bearcats lost to a team they should have beat. And I think that was the deciding point that he decided to make a change. Well, Mark D'Antonio was the choice. And ironically, Mark and Luke Fickell, as far as their resumes, meaning they were defensive coordinators at Ohio State, not to mention very similar in their ideas as just human beings, family guys, high moral standards. You know, coaches are very good at, particularly when they're dealing with the press, of lying. You know, lying's maybe a strong word, but you know, will number 82 play today? Well, you know, I think he might be okay, but we're not sure. We're still trying to figure out things like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you would know if Mark D'Antonio or Luke Fickell was trying to fool you. They couldn't lie. That's how honest these guys are. And so that being said, I think Mark D'Antonio took it to the next step. There was an AD change there, and that always creates issues when the new AD didn't hire the coach. I love Mark D'Antonio. I had a chance to spend some time with him this summer. He was out at Camp Higher Ground where the Bearcats do their summer practice, and had a chance to talk to him for a while. And he was just a great guy. He still is. But anyway, he had an opportunity, and I think he wasn't looking to move anywhere. But Mike Thomas, who was the AD at the time, the athletic director at the time, really wouldn't give him a vote of confidence. And Mark took that as kind of a slap in the face and decided to accept the Michigan State job. Went up there, had a long career with them, did a really, really good job there. Now, he left the place. Rick Minner left the place better than when he got here.
Yeah.
Mark D'Antonio left the place better than when he got here. That brought in Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly took it to a whole different level. And there was something about Brian. He, you, you, you guys, whatever the industry is or whatever the position, and it might just be somebody that you know on a personal level, you just know that that person's got their act together. You know, they know what they're doing. And that's the way I felt about Brian Kelly. I can't put my finger on what he did better than anybody else, but he had a way to command respect. And then secondly, just to pull the trigger to make the right plays to win a game. And that's how good he was. And obviously by his 12-year career at Notre Dame, and he just became the all-time winning coach in Notre Dame history, surpassing Newt Rockne. He's doing the right things there as well. So he took that to a next level as well. And it was pretty obvious he was going to, at a point in time, have a choice. But I think he wanted to stay at Cincinnati too. But there were certain jobs that, if they came calling, he would leave for, and that's what happened. You know, and then the breakup there was a little bit ugly with him, you know, leaving the team banquet prior to the Sugar Bowl and the way that the whole Sugar Bowl went down. And I don't think Cincinnati would have beat Florida in the Sugar Bowl if Brian would have stayed, but it would have been a closer game. That team was in disarray at that particular point in time with Brian just kind of bailing on him. And there's a whole lot of people that won't forget how he left, and that's why people don't like him down here in Cincinnati. But I will tell you that he's a really, really good football coach, and I respect him for all he did. And, you know, again, I think as a Bearcat fan and ex-player, I'm glad he was here and he left the place better than when he got here. So that's a long way of saying, as I tend to ramble at times, I think the world of Mark D'Antonio, I think the world of Luke Fickell, and I enjoyed my time with Brian Kelly. You know, Butch Jones and Tommy Tuberville, those were guys that, you know, always treated me with respect, but at the same time, Butch was always looking for another job, and Tommy was kind of on the back end of his career, and now he's a senator, and, you know, all the best to him.
He is a senator. This is so true.
Yeah, you wouldn't think you'd say that about a football coach, would you?
And certainly the way Brian Kelly left is fueling Bearcats' thoughts about this game coming up, so you got that little storyline as well. And I want to ask you this, as we're on talking about Brian Kelly, and it's, you know, been on Twitter all week. I've certainly was miffed by it. A lot of fans are miffed by it. What's your take on it? But, you know, Brian Kelly in his press conference earlier this week said something along the lines he wanted to give, you know, the Bearcats the opportunity to play Notre Dame. I saw where Dan,
seemed a little condescending.
Your sidekick, Dan Horn is a reporter here.
Dan Horn is my sidekick.
your sidekick, Dan Horn, the play-by-play man for the Bearcats, said he didn't have a problem with it, and he explained on Twitter. And what's your take, Jim?
Yeah. So, and I do read Dan Horn's stuff too, so I know. But yes, Dan jumped in immediately, and I'm on Dan's side. I think you got to know Brian, and, you know, maybe it didn't come off the right way. You know, and I can see exactly what you mean, that it sounds a little condescending. Well, we decided we'd play Cincinnati. But what he's saying is, to me anyway, Notre Dame is a legendary program. We have a lot of options when we go to play teams. There's a whole lot of people that would like to come in here and play because they, you know, see 90,000 people in the stadium. Not to mention, you know, I don't know what the payout is. I think I read 1.2 million or something like that. Not that Cincinnati was doing it for the money. But that being said, I mean, I think what Brian was saying is, you know, with my history with Cincinnati, and when they approached me about a game, I had the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to play them. I'd rather play, you know, Kent State, or I'd rather play, you know, Ball State or Northern Illinois or somebody like that. And again, that's no knock on those schools whatsoever. But if you're Brian Kelly, you have to say, well, I'm going to struggle a little bit more with Cincinnati than I am with some of the MAC schools or some of the, you know, whatever, even maybe somebody from the Big South or, you know, one of those conferences that I need to play earlier in the year. So I don't think he was trying to, you know, slam the program or slam the university. I think he was just trying to explain that it was his choice to have Cincinnati come play there, and that he's, you know, happy that they are. But at the same time, I think it did come off a little bit that way. I read, you know, some of those tweets as well. I applaud Dan for jumping in immediately, and not that that stops, you know, Twitter's Twitter. It isn't going to stop a whole lot, but
we're aware.
It's a lot coming from Dan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure all of Cincinnati is going to the game. Getting tickets was very hard and possibly expensive. Nobody tell Alex Coolidge. So I think, what should everyone be watching for?
Yeah. You know, I think everything we've talked about, this is a huge game. And I think, you know, there are a ton of people going up. And I was fortunate enough, somebody had included me into the Notre Dame group ticket sale. So I was able to buy roughly 30 tickets, you know, which I only got two through Cincinnati on my UCATS donations. So that being said, I mean, and I'm not the only one that did that. There's a whole lot of other people going to this game. So I think it's, number one, it's the magnitude of the game, you know, to use Jason's numbers, number seven, Cincinnati versus number nine, Notre Dame. And then secondly, I don't know if either of you guys have been to a game there. It's an unbelievable experience. You know, it's you look at the stadium itself, you look around it, you know, the touchdown Jesus, the campus is absolutely gorgeous, the entire campus. It's like an oasis in the middle of a not-so-nice city, South Bend. When I say not-so-nice, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of good things there, but it's got its typical urban problems. But that being said, it is absolutely gorgeous. And from what I understand, at least the last time I looked, the weather was going to be, you know, sunny and 70 something and should be just a perfect day for football.
So, and I've never been.
I'm thrilled that, you know, I don't even know the number. The thing holds 90,000, but let's say 5,000 to 7,000 Cincinnati people could be there. I think that's great. If anybody that was in Indiana, you know, I think it was only 3,000 people, but they made a difference. They really did. There was, you know, 52,000 Hoosier fans and 3,000 Bearcat fans, and it made a difference. And it's kind of probably going to be, you know, the same percentage as this week. But it will make a difference. And I just think it's a neat experience. And I would wholeheartedly, if anybody, you know, whether it's this game that you're going to or whether down the road you get a chance to go see a game at Notre Dame, please do.
Have you gone to a game there before?
I have.
Okay.
I have. And, you know, and I know this is going to make all the Brian Kelly haters mad at me, but I'm going to say 2 years after he left, he had told me when he left, you ever want to come to a game, let me know. So I sent an email to his secretary, Beth Rex, who I knew from down here in Cincinnati. Yeah. She was with him here. And come on up, be my guest. And he got me two tickets to the 50-yard line. So.
Boom.
I went to the Notre Dame Air Force game quite a few years back, about 7 years back.
Very cool. Yeah.
So I have not been. Is it going to be like the movie Rudy? I'm sorry, I have to ask.
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah, it's a great movie, though. Okay. And I actually heard the real Rudy. He's a motivational speaker now, and at a conference I was at a few years ago, he was a speaker, and he was very good. Doesn't look at all like the guy that played him in the movie, though, and I can't think of that actor's name, but nonetheless.
Sean Austin. I love that movie.
The ironic part about that is, so the names that were on, so as you saw the players' names as you went, you know, a couple of scenes there in the locker room or whatever, those were guys, a couple of those guys I played high school ball with. So those are real names and real numbers and everything. So I had extra interest to watch that movie, Rudy. But, you know, if there is a Rudy moment, hopefully maybe it's, you know, somebody in the Bearcat squad. Like, I think last week was a somewhat Rudy moment, although, you know, Rudy was a guy that never got into the game and did get into the game and make one play. But Bearcats had like a kind of an unsung hero, a young man from Coleraine High School. Last week, Deshaun Pace, who was not last week, but last game, who was the hero of the Indiana game, had 10 tackles and an interception at the end. And that's a little different than Rudy because Rudy didn't get in there that often. But nonetheless, you know, I don't know if we'll see a Rudy, you know, type thing this week, but you want kind of a maybe somebody to win the game that you know, that you were maybe weren't expecting. You know, certainly Desmond Ridder. The Cincinnati has three or four guys on defense that are excellent players. So we'll see. I don't know if there'll be a Rudy moment though.
Well, Jim, this has been great. I got two things for you. Thank you so much for joining us here today and sharing about this. And my second thing and my final thing is,
bring us home a winner from South Bend.
Well, I want to thank you guys, first of all, for having me. I appreciate that very much. And it's nice to be able in a format that you guys have, not to mention, the Cincinnati Enquirer and Cincinnati.com that, I get a lot of guys that run podcasts out of their basement that have 8 listeners that want to talk UC football. But I think this just brings home to me, Jason and Sherry, where UC football has gone, has become, and where it is at this particular point in time. And so I would just say thank you so much for having me on. And lastly, I just hope very much we're able to bring home a winner. It should be one whale of a football game on paper. It's shaping up that way.
All right. Thanks again to Jim Kelly. One of the great guys around the university and great people around the university and the university football program. And
I learned a lot. I think it's fair to say I'm not a football expert.
I've said this to my friends and people before as a college football junkie. Like, I think Jim Kelly is second to none when it comes to his broadcasting, and him and Dan Hoard just for years and years have done a fantastic job. And Jim Kelly's breaking down on the air of plays and the team is, I know he's just, because he loves the Bearcats so much, but that's a person who I think, if ESPN ever needed someone, that's a guy I would be calling, because he just
don't give them any really ideas. Good at it.
But anyway, that shifts us into Jim Kelly is very, very Cincinnati. Through and through. And that brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry, take it away.
I went to something that's not in Cincinnati over the weekend, but is very Cincinnati in the best possible way. I went to Camp Joy as part of Leadership Cincinnati's 45s class. I'm honored to be part of that experience, and that's just kind of kicking off for the year. But you go away overnight to Camp Joy, and I've heard for years about, they do a lot of executive retreats. They have school groups come out. It's about team building and really just getting away from it all and thinking about things. And it is the incredible experience that everyone said that it is. You can't see me, but I'm fairly covered up from head to toe. I'm one big bruise from doing a ropes course, zip lining.
What is Camp Joy? Where is Camp Joy at?
It's kind of by Wilmington. It's like 45 minutes north of the city, because it's in the woods.
Is it a YMCA camp? Or?
It isn't. It's just, it's its own thing. You stay in bunk houses. So you're not in tents. I think that probably would be a bridge too far for some people, possibly me, since there were showers and everything. Big campfire at night. It really was. We're very lucky to have it. And it's just the people who run it. I mean, they really made me think about my life. Like, I left there, I feel like a little bit of a changed person just because of the things they kind of took us through. There's some special people out there, really.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Camp Joy. Are you happier now since you went to Camp Joy?
Actually, I am. But then we were right back at the mayor's race the minute I got home. But
what mayor's race?
Oh, we did have a debate.
You had a debate. Well, here's my problem with that is that you had a debate, and it's like, okay, you had like a spirited debate, and then it was like nothing for the next week.
You did write a column out of it, so there was that.
As of yesterday, neither candidate had booked any ads on any TV or radio. I'd have to go back and check today. It's now we're in under 5 weeks until the election. And I know we talk about politics in the first segment, but you brought up the mayor's race, and it's like, where was the campaign coming out of what I thought was a debate that sort of got this thing kicked off? I'm not expecting you to answer that. It's just that's for the candidates to answer, but clearly they think flying under the radar is the way to go in this campaign. So anyway.
All right. Here's my factoid of the week before we go on the mayor's race. that both candidates, David Mann and Aftab Purival, do not only live in Clifton, they live in the same precinct.
Interesting.
Next mayor will be from Clifton. There you go. There's the scoop. You needed it today. That's it.
There you go. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.